Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Field, that one's called to the right. Hunter on the move, racing back. It's over his head. It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
This is Red Sox Beat on CLNS Radio.
I think it would be a big statement if John Farrell started Travis Shaw on opening day, and I'd be totally cool with it. Because I think if that doesn't give Sandoval motivation to play better defense and play better, period, nothing will.
I think they're going to make Jeter that first unanimous vote, and I hate that about baseball writers. If you belong in the Hall of Fame, you get voted in the Hall of Fame.
Achievement or a new milestone. So don't just be like, yay, we signed this player, so we're going to have a ceremony. Like, no. Like,
now to your hosts.
All right, Red Sox fans, Red Sox Beat, CLNS Media, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage of your Boston Red Sox and, of course, all other sports in New England. CLNS Media on Twitter, same thing on Facebook, of course. Don't forget our free iOS and Android app. You can listen to all of the network's podcasts there on the go in traffic to work. If you're just sitting at home and don't want to get off the couch, you can listen to us on there as well. Jess Thomas, Lauren Campbell alongside me this week as always. What's going on, guys?
Same old. I'm excited to talk some baseball. I missed you guys last week, so I'm excited to get caught up with this week and talk some Apple Watch, some baseball, some Doug Fister, so I'm pretty pumped.
Always got the fist, yes. We're all lighted up. We got all three of us. We got lights. We're ready for action. Camera.
We're gonna tweet this picture out after we record the show and the show goes live because we want to show you what Jess is really looking at on the other side of him. We are trying to make our video quality as nice as possible for all of you to see our beautiful faces, and we have lamps going on and everything. And Jess is living in like a homemade studio over there, so we're going to tweet the picture out. So we'll have it everywhere, and make sure you go follow us on Twitter at @RedSox_beat to check that out. It's a phenomenal homemade studio, so we'll tweet that out, but that's great. I don't even want to talk baseball. I just want to talk about why you made that studio so robust, but you did it.
And well, I don't want to take the credit. We got to give that credit to the lady.
To the almost wifey. Almost wifey. Yes.
Almost wifey.
Almost wifey.
26 days.
Which is a big deal. So we'll go to baseball because we have to at some point, right? And let's get to the week that was for the Boston Red Sox. It was okay. It wasn't up and down. It was a little bit of everything, Jess. Let's just go right into the recap because we have things to talk about. We have Applegate, Watchgate, whatever you want to call it. We haven't talked on that yet here, so we're going to quickly touch on that. Christian Vasquez with the ump in that situation. We'll get into that. A lot going on. And then, of course, Doug Fister just fisting everybody in the league he pitches against, and I want to talk about that too. So, Jess, how'd this week end up?
It was a good week besides the beginning and the end. Bad start, bad end, but great middle. But first of all, Applegate, that's like a sausage brand, isn't it? Isn't that like a brand of sausage?
Applegate? I don't know, is it?
Like, yeah, Applegate.
I thought it was like smoked apple wood. I'm thinking of a type. I'm hungry now.
I'm going to look it up. Just keep going.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up. Applegate right. Sausage. That's a good thing in my browser history, right?
Yeah, Applegate sausage.
Applegate
Sorry,
sausage. You're right. It's a breakfast sausage. Applegate Naturals. It's copyrighted. No one can
use
it.
That sounds familiar. Applegate. I've heard that before. All right. Back to baseball. So the first game is Monday, 10-4 Blue Jays win. I was sitting on the Green Monster for this game for my bachelor party, speaking of weddings and all that great stuff. Busy month here. And it was a great experience, minus the game. I sat in the Green Monster. Wally came and visited me and gave me a bag full of garb. And Then we went on the field after the game, went inside the Green Monster. And then
and what were you guys dressed as? What were you guys dressed as?
We were dressed as Dennis Eckersley.
Yeah, love it.
Cat night, which was just an added wrinkle to the whole thing. And then to top off the night, I met Garen Austin on the street.
Wow. Garen Austin.
It was a pretty wild night.
What a beautiful lady she is.
The game wasn't so great. Rick Porcello started, and he gave up a lot of home runs, which has been par for the course for him. We defend him a lot. Hard to defend him in this game. He pitched 5 1/3 innings, gave out 10 hits, 7 runs, 3 home runs. Kendrys Morales hit a 3-run homer in the first inning. The Sox came back a little bit to make it 3-2 with a Nunez 2-RBI hit. Then Jose Bautista hit a home run to make it 4-2. And then Rafi Lopez hit the big one, his third home run of the year, 2 against the Red Sox, 2-run homer in the 6th to knock Porcello out. 7-2 at that point. The Sox got a couple runs back in the 6th and 7th to make it 7-4. Then Matt Barnes came in and gave up 4 hits and 3 runs in 2/3 of an inning in garbage time, including a Justin Smoke home run. Final was 10-4. I hate to crap on this game because I was there and it was an incredible experience, but this game was terrible.
Yeah, and it wasn't fun to watch. And Jess, I'm sorry, I had to, that game that was your bachelor party game, but it was just, I mean, I know we've blamed lack of run support pretty much all year for Rick Porcello, but this game, it's just, you know, they got four runs.
We'll do that again later in the week for Porcello.
We absolutely not for will. This one, though. we're gonna do something completely opposite and not back up Rick Porcello, but it's just, it's so frustrating because I feel like we got enough run support for him. Obviously, the scoreboard, we did not, but it was just not a good game all around.
No, it wasn't. I'm leaning away from Rick Porcello nowadays. I don't know. It's just been up and down too much for me, but this game was, you know, if Rick Porcello pitches like he normally does, or I can't say normally does, but like did last year, and, you know, with confidence, you win with 4 runs. That's the run support we ask. We don't ask for 6-10 runs a game because he shouldn't need that. 4 runs should be plenty enough, and obviously he didn't give up all 10 runs, but 4 runs should be enough to win a baseball game if you're Rick Porcello.
Right, but when you give up 3 home runs and 7 runs in just 5 1/3 innings, that's not quite the recipe you're looking for. So we won't back him up here, and I didn't back him up on the round table tonight, which was weird. I don't like it, but there's always hope. So let's get to the good stuff, the 4 wins in a row, starting with Tuesday. This game was just a little bit insane, probably because it went to 19 innings.
Is that because it was like 2 games?
Yeah, more than two games plus an inning.
Yeah, seriously.
The game was 6 hours long. Remarkably, though, guys, it didn't seem like it was 19 innings. Like, there was a lot of outs and extra innings. And really, I mean, like I was saying in our chat, I was like, for a 19-inning game, this game really has, I feel like the game didn't take that long. Like, it could have been a lot longer.
It could have been, yeah. I didn't watch the whole thing. I'm not going to say I did. But most of it, I did watch through, like, the 13th inning, and even those 13 innings flew by. Like, it wasn't a terribly long game for 19 innings, for what I saw.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing because, of course,
that's
I did.
Nut job.
High five.
Yeah. I mean, it was, but it didn't feel like 19 innings. It was great because I had a launch party to go to that night, so when I got home, I still had like 4 hours of baseball, a little to my knowledge. I didn't know it was going to be that long, but I was like, yes, this is great. And I was like, oh, man, I get a whole game. I miss most of the game. I get the whole game anyway.
But I know. Just... I got to work at 10 o'clock and still watch 3 hours of baseball.
I'm just so nice. Happy they won that game, though, because I committed so much time into that game where I'm like, if they don't win.
I know. 6 hours on the nose, ended at 110. So let's break it down. The Blue Jays were up 2-0 up until the 9th inning. Kendrys Morales hit a 2-run solo home run to make it 2-0 in the 6th. Eduardo Rodriguez started. Pitched well. 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts. Marco Estrada pitched even better for the Blue Jays. He went 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs. He was great. He's had a bad season, but he always seems to pitch well against the Red Sox. And that was it until the 9th inning. Roberto Osuna, who's a pretty good closer, came into the game. He has blown a lot of saves this year, though. And the Sox got some base runners, got 2 groundouts to score 2 runs, and it was tied at 2. And we're like, well, all right, 2 runs, tie game, good stuff. Didn't know we were going to be playing 10 more innings in this game. And the reason we did play 10 more innings, at least from the Red Sox side, is that the bullpen was outstanding. The Sox had 11 relievers in this game, pitched 12 innings, and they gave up 0 runs, which is incredible. It tied for the Major League record that was set 2 days before, or 1 day before, I believe. The Astros used 12 pitchers out of the pen. That's September baseball for you. But the Sox had Joe Kelly, Addison Reed, Craig Kimbrell all pitch an inning of perfect ball. And then Brandon Workman and Austin Maddox pitched two innings each without giving up a run. Then Hembree pitched an inning. Robbie Scott pitched two-thirds of an inning. Blaine Boyer pitched two innings. Fernando Abad pitched a third of an inning. Carson Smith made his debut in the 18th inning with a scoreless inning. And then Hector Velasquez pitched the 19th, and he pitched a scoreless inning. That was crazy. We'll get to that in a second. Then the Red Sox won in the bottom of the 19th when Mookie Betts hit a double to start the inning, and then Hanley Ramirez hit a bloop to center. Even Superman himself, Kevin Pillar wasn't fast enough to get it. It dropped in. Betts scored. Sox won in 19 innings. But there's no doubt that the story of this game was all those incredible scoreless innings by all those different pitchers, and then Carson Smith as well.
I'm so bummed that I wanted to see Carson Smith, and it took too long. I wasn't a trooper.
You got to stay up to 12:30 in the morning.
Let me ask you, because that's been a storyline that intrigues me coming into September. Obviously, all of them pitching so well was fantastic, but you guys watched it. How do you think Carson Smith looked?
Fantastic.
That slider was sliding.
I was really excited to see him. I was super, super pumped to finally see this guy in the mound. And I know, Jess, I know you were too. It was just really good to see him get out there and finally pitch at the major league level. We waited so long for this moment. And for him to go out and just be dominant along with the entire bullpen, I think it was a good first start. And I think it was a good position from the B in because he could have easily blown the game, and he didn't.
Yeah, it was a hard spot to put him in. 18th inning, you don't want to blow the game at this point. Huge on the line because you could pick up a game against the Yankees because they lost on that day. You know,
yep.
After a 2.5-hour rain delay, they still finished their game before the Red Sox and lost. So the game in the division was sitting there waiting for them. So it was great to get that win. Yeah, Smith looked good. I mean, he had a strikeout. He didn't give up any base runners. He threw 16 pitches. And his slider is so, so filthy. I'm sure you saw a replay, Jared. His slider is so nasty.
Yeah, I did watch the highlights, but obviously it's not like we're watching it like pitch by pitch. But his slider is what makes him so good. That's like that's his pitch because of his arm slot, because of, you know, he is a reliever. Having a slider like that on top of a fastball is what makes him so dangerous. That's why I was intrigued to see how he did. And moving forward, like I've been talking about, it's can he be reliable enough that basically adding an arm like that in September is like having a stud call up or having like a late season free agent sign with you because of this?
Well, I think it's huge because you have, you know, you bring him back at the beginning of September like they did, you know, before the middle of September, first week or so, and now he can work his way back in and not pitch every day because he's obviously not doing that because they don't want to wear him out immediately. But he, you know, he works his way in, and by the playoffs, you'd assume he'd be in pretty good shape. I mean, there's not a game every day in the playoffs, so it lines up perfectly for him to get into games. So I think the time he came back worked out really well to be ready for October.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we can keep him on this track where, you know, obviously, like you said, we don't want to wear him out, but if you get him in, you know, every other game, every two, three games, then I think that'd be perfect, especially going into October. And like you said, there's not a game every day in October, so keep kind of that consistency. He's going to be great.
Yeah, exactly. So that was fun. Great game. I wish I was at that one because I like long games. Man, if I was in the Monster for 19 innings.
Would have got your money's worth going up there. Your friends would have got your money's worth. God.
And we would have seen a win, too. But can't control that. So I went on Wednesday as well.
I did, too.
Lauren. We both went. Not together, but we did both go. And this game was interesting because it was wet, nasty, but the Sox played really well. It started raining at 7:50. It pretty much rained the entire time until 10 o'clock on, like, different varying levels of rain. We were soaked. Me and Bridger were scoring the game, and we had to stop in the sixth inning because the score sheet was so wet. I'm surprised we lasted that long. We were trying to like cover it with our program, and it worked a little bit, but it was pretty wet, but we battled it out. I'm just glad it wasn't raining on Monday because we were better equipped to deal with the rain than seven of us at a bachelor party were.
On the Green Monster.
Anyway, on the Green Monster. So I think that worked out well. We all got to sit in the rain here. Me, Bridget, Lauren, and Leona sitting in the rain. We're getting really personal here. A lot of exciting stuff. A lot of games to attend. But the game was great. Doug Fister started against Joe Biagini. He sucks. Fister was great. Same thing as always for Fister. He had a bad first inning, as he always does. So I hope if he pitches in the playoffs, that doesn't happen because you can't afford that in the playoffs. Fortunately, he just gave up one run in this game. He walked in Miguel Montero for a run, but then the Sox got it right back in the first inning. Eduardo Nunez got the thing going. He got a single, stole second, went to third, and then scored in a ground out. So he really did some good stuff there. And then the rain started coming in the fourth, and it's funny how it works, because right as the rain started happening, the Sox were like, oh, we got to score. We got to get out of here before the fifth, before the so they can call
it. It builds urgency. It really does.
It does. It really does. It was funny how that happened, to see it firsthand. Xander Bogaerts hit an RBI triple to right field to make it 2-1. Rafael Devers hit a single to left field to make it 3-1. And then Jackie Bradley Jr. hit a monster blast into the bullpen to make it 5-1. While the rain was coming down pretty hard, he probably couldn't even see, and he cranked that jack, make it 5-1. And then they actually never called the game. It kept raining throughout it, but it didn't. It wasn't enough to call it, which is good because, you know, good to finish the game. And the Sox scored one more run in the sixth to make it 6-1. And Fisher was dominant. After the first inning, he didn't give up anything. He went 7 innings again, giving up 4 hits, 1 run, and a season-high 9 strikeouts. Biagini gave up 5 runs and 3 and a third. He came out pretty quick there in that inning. So, yeah, I mean, Doug Fister's show. Sox take 2 out of 3, and they played through the rain. So, you know, bad weather, but they made it count.
I love that Fister showed his worth in the conditions, too, because, you know, once you get into late September, October, maybe November, who knows, cross your fingers, it gets nasty around here. So, if you know, being able to pitch in those kind of conditions off and on, unpredictable, balls wet, you know, those sort of things, you know, it's nice to see him pitch through that. And I'm on the Fister bandwagon, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a while to get on there because when he first got here, he looked shaky and all that. But it was so refreshing to see him pitch so well and be so dominant, especially, like you said, in the rain. And it wasn't like it was cold, but it wasn't hot either. It's definitely really like weird weather on Wednesday. And I was soaked. My mom was soaked. I really need to give a shout out to my mom for sticking through the 9 innings with me. I'm pretty sure she was ready to leave like the fourth. And she's like, after we left, I was like, oh, thanks for staying with me. And she's like, well, I couldn't ask you to leave early. So big shout out.
She knows her daughter. Like,
she does. Right. She does. She created this monster. So big shout out to Leona right there for sticking out that 3-hour game with me. And she,
yeah,
like,
most moms in their 60s would not stick out a rainy 3-hour game.
So she sang Sweet Caroline. She did the take me out to the ball game. She had pizza. Like, she stuck through the whole thing. She was prepared. She had a raincoat, but she was so prepared the whole game. And she's like, thank God they won. And I'm so glad, because I took her last year and it was just a crap show of a game that I took her to. So I'm glad that we saw good pitching. We saw some offense. We saw some home runs. We saw a triple. So very, very good game.
Yeah, it was a fun one, minus the rain. But hey, that's when real fans show their colors.
Yeah, there was nobody there.
I messaged you. I'm like, you stayed to the end? You're like, yeah, you? I was like, yeah, of course.
Of course. So yeah, there was nobody there either. Like, we moved. We were in the bleachers, and then we got closer to in between home plate and third base. So we got a lot closer.
Nice.
Yeah.
We were in the right field roof box, which is a great view. Even
fantastic.
I love being up there.
Yep,
it's so
one
great.
Of my favorite spots.
So I get to send the monster on Monday, and then the right field roof box on Wednesday.
You are spoiled.
I know. I know. I didn't have to pay for the monster tickets. I paid for the right field roof box, but only $16 because it was a weekday, September, and it was raining. So I got a super deal.
That's nice.
I paid $23 for mine, so I get great. It was great.
Yeah, that's September is the way to do it. So moving on, off day on Thursday, and then on Friday, we had a nice start to the series against the Rays. And the first game was great. A 9-3 win. Drew Pomeranz against Chris Archer. Drew Pomeranz continued to do what he does. And Chris Archer continued to do what he does against the Red Sox. Pomeranz gave up 2 hits and 2 runs, 7 strikeouts and 6 innings. Fantastic. Got his 15th win. Dropped his ERA to 3.35. Chris Archer, on the other hand, pitched 3 innings, gave up 9 hits, 8 runs, 6 earned. And he is now 2-12 in his career against the Red Sox with an ERA over 6. Not sure what happens to him against the Sox, but they got after it quick against him. Mookie Betts hit a 3-run homer in the first inning with no outs. Pedroia Benintendi got on base, and Betts hit a 3-run homer just to the left of the foul pole in right field. It was like the shortest home run in history, and it was 3-0 before an out was recorded. So that was a great start, but that wasn't all the Red Sox wanted to get in this one, because in the fourth they got 5 more runs, which was icing on the cake. A lot of hits, three different RBI singles, Jackie Bradley Jr., Andrew Benintendi, Hanley Ramirez, all got RBI singles in the inning, and they got 5-0 to make it 8-0, and then the Indians, I already got that. The Rays got three runs in the 5th and 7th inning to make it 8-3. Vasquez got an RBI double in the 7th to make it 9-3. So, good offensive performance, 3-for-3 for Rafael Devers, 2 hits for Benintendi, 2 hits for Vasquez, the 3-run homer for Betts, and Drew Pomeranz shut him down. So this was great. I mean, good pitching, good offense, and Chris Archer sucks.
Archer is terrible against the Red Sox.
I don't know what it is, but he can't do it.
I know. He's so good against everyone else, but he can't pitch against us.
It was great. I saw on Twitter, it was just a random tweet that popped up, and all it said was the Red Sox still own Chris Archer. That's all it said. It was like, I'm like, and that's all you really need to know about this game is exactly that, because I don't know. I don't know why he can't control his pitches. I don't understand why he just can't, why he falls apart. It's just like he just forgets how to pitch, and it's just like he's playing, you know, just kind of tossing the ball, and they just know how to hit him. They have this guy figured out, kind of like how the Indians have Chris Sale figured out, I guess you could say. But it's just like, wow, I wish Chris Archer could pitch all the time against us.
Seriously, this game was literally Drew Pomeranz is Drew Pomeranz. Chris Archer sucks against the Red Sox. Move on, 9-3. That's it. That's all it was.
Yeah, that was the recipe. I mean, the game was over in the first 4 innings because it was 8-0 already.
Yeah, at that point, you watch it because you enjoy baseball, but like that game's over.
Yeah, they put it out of reach early, which is funny because they put Saturday's game out of reach even earlier than Friday's. Another great offensive performance. This game is Chris Sale against Matt Andrees. Chris Sale went back to doing business because he just pitches like a maniac against bad teams, no question about it. 6 innings, 6 hits, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, no runs. He only threw up 97 pitches. If this was a game he had to pitch in, he probably would have went 2 more innings, but there was no need because Matt Andrees pitched an inning and 2/3, gave up 7 hits, 8 runs, 6
disgusting.
Earned. I don't know who was worse, Andrees or Archer. I think Andrees was worse.
Andrees was worse. Awful. Andrees was terrible. Yeah.
Because he didn't even get out of the 2nd inning. So in this one, Dustin Pedroia hit a 2-run homer in the 1st. Once again, before there was an out recorded, Nunez got a single. Pedroia hit a home run. It was his 1st extra base hit since coming off the DL, so that was good to see. Mitch Moreland got the 3rd run in and a ground out. And then the Sox were right back at it in the 2nd inning. Andrew Benintendi hit a 2-RBI double off the Green Monster to make it 5-0. And then they intentionally walked Mookie Betts to get to Mitch Moreland, who decided to do the same exact thing and crank a ball right off the Monster, pretty much the same exact place as Benintendi, for 2 more runs, and it was 7-0. And then Hanley Ramirez reached on a terrible throw by Evan Longoria to make it 8-0, and that one bounced into first base. It was 8-0 after 2 innings. It was 9-0 after 3 innings. Sale just did his thing, and then nobody else scored in the game because it was already 9-0. So 9 runs on 15 hits for the Sox, no runs on 8 hits for the Rays, and I mean, if you're staking Chris Sale 9 runs in 3 innings, you are never losing that game.
No, this game was just offense on offense. Rays couldn't hold on. Obviously, he pitched like crap. So I think he was worse than Archer, I do. And, you know, nice to see the offense actually take advantage of that, though, because there are some times this year where you should have been able to do this and didn't. So as the season's progressing, you're still trying to hold on to first place. It's nice to see the offense take care of a game like this when you had an opportunity to pounce and kind of put it away early, and they did.
Yeah, especially with Sale on the mound, too. You mean, you need to, after his last 2 starts, you need to give that guy some run support, and that's exactly what they did. And I think at one point, when Mitch Moreland came to bat, he was like the 8th batter in the inning, and there were still no outs. And I think it was this game, but it was just absolutely insane, just like run after run. And it's not often you see Longoria make a terrible throw, so I was just like, oh, this game's definitely going in our favor after I saw that.
Right. Yeah, Andrees couldn't get an out to save his life. He was awful.
It was bad.
He couldn't do anything. So 2 great offensive performances in a row, 9 runs in each game, so that was great to see. That was a 4th straight win. This brought us into Sunday. Not so much runs in this game. 4-1 Tampa Bay win yesterday on Sunday. Rick Porcello against Alex Cobb. Cobb's a good pitcher. Both pitched well. Cobb gave up 4 hits and 1 run in 5 innings. Porcello gave up 5 hits, 2 runs in 5 innings as well. But a couple runs for the Rays off the bullpen. Wilson Ramos hit a home run off Brandon Workman, and Lucas Duda hit a home run off of Robbie Scott. And that was the difference, 4-1 final. So unlike in the first game of this week with Porcello. This one, they didn't give him any run support because he pitched well enough to win. You know, he went five innings, gave up two runs, but the offense was nowhere to be found. They had five singles and couldn't do anything. So I guess it was bound to happen. They scored nine runs in the first two games, and they had won four in a row. I guess they were bound for a dud. Unfortunately, it was for Porcello, which means he's now 9-17. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, this game, I looked at this game, and I kind of watched the highlights again, and Porcello didn't pitch bad, but I think the issue with me is just the consistency. It's not the fact, obviously, he's not getting run support half the year, but also I want him to pitch consistent enough that I shouldn't have to worry about it, or at least that the run support always isn't the argument, because in this game, he did pitch well enough to win, and obviously they just ran into a good pitcher in a tough situation, but there have been other games and other situations where if he was just consistently okay, Red Sox might have more confidence, you know, because if you're Porcello's teammate and he does what he always does, you know, you give up a home run first couple innings, that's depleting to a team. Now you're behind again all of a sudden, and Red Sox have to do that a lot. So if you are Porcello, I think his objective here through the rest of September is really just work on coming out of the gate stronger and actually not allowing home runs early, because that consistency of not doing that is something that'll help, I think, the offense gain momentum and grow that confidence early in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely frustrating because, you know, we can use the run support argument for a game like this, but we can't use it in his last game. And it's the consistency, like you said. It's so frustrating to not know what kind of pitcher you're going to get every single outing. And, you know, he's 9-17. He leads the league in losses. I'm pretty sure he leads the league in home runs given up.
And hits.
And then this time last year, his record was 20-3. And just to think, like, they say a lot can change in a year, and holy moly, I didn't think it could be this drastic. But, and I'm not saying, you know, I expect another Cy Young year, like year for him.
This is 2 years ago. This is bad.
No, yeah, I expected
every September,
like,
we're like, whoa, what happened to Rick Porcello? Terrible, great, not so
yeah.
good.
Yeah, and I understand, like, you know, I don't expect 20 more wins from him, but I was expecting at least 15. I wasn't expecting a subpar, terrible, I don't even know what I can call it, kind of season from him, because, I mean, he's never been this terrible in his career. He's been good. He's been mediocre, but he's never been like this. So it just sucks to see it come, and everyone just loves to hate on him, but I'll use the run support argument for 80% of his starts, and it's just, you can't blame him all the time. You can't win games if you score one run, and sometimes you can, but you just, it's not going to happen.
Well, yeah, he's given up a lot of home runs and a lot of hits this year, but he has not pitched as bad this year as he did 2 years ago. He just hasn't.
No.
No,
absolutely
but,
not.
But the home run ball is still an issue.
Oh
yeah.
I don't think, obviously, it's obviously not as bad of a situation. 2 years ago, he couldn't find the strike zone. He walked it. Like, it was bad. This year, it's just the consistency with getting to a good start early, because the home runs are the reason why he fails, because one bad pitch might be all he throws. He might throw a bunch of good pitches and one bad one, but that one bad pitch is worth three or four runs because of the home run. So that's my concern with him moving forward. Not completely gone on him yet, but I am pretty convinced that he might be the one to have to sit out in the rotation if Doug Fister's going to get in. He keeps pitching like this.
And not for nothing, the bullpen gave up two home runs in that game, too. It wasn't just Rick Porcello's doing. And, you know, that's when you leave the game in the hands of your bullpen, too. Like, you need to trust those bullpen guys, and they come in here and they just don't do their job.
Well, it's hard to blame them, too, though, because coming into Sunday's game, they gave up one run in the last 21 innings, partly because they had 13 scoreless innings on Tuesday.
Right.
But they were pitching great, too, coming into this game. So it's like, you know, sometimes it just doesn't all work together at the same time. So, you know, so be it.
The beauty of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, 4-2 week, take 2 out of 3 from both teams. Me and Jared didn't get it quite right. We were close, but we didn't quite get it right. So we'll take it. 4-2 week's good. It was great middle of the week, you know, stayed ahead of the Yankees pretty much throughout the week with all those wins. So that was good. MVP, I am going to give a co-MVP, and it's really more for breaking out of slumps. My first MVP is Xander Benintendi. He came into the week and continued the week and was hitting 0-for-20, and then he broke out. He got two hits on Friday, three hits on Saturday, and another hit on Sunday. He had 5 RBI in the week and those 6 hits. So I'm going to give one to him for doing that. And then also Rafael Devers, he was also in a slump, and he'd been pretty bad for a couple weeks, but huge for him and for the team. He showed that he could overcome that, and he had a really, really nice week. Several multi-hit games during the week. He had about two on Wednesday, three on Friday, and two on Saturday. He didn't have a whole lot of RBI, but he did have a lot of hits there. So that was good for his confidence. So I give it to both of them for just getting out of their slumps and getting some good hits this week.
I give huge cut to Devers because, you know, he started hit the slump and everyone started talking, uh-oh, here it is. Here's the rookie slump. Here it is. He's stepped in there. They've kept putting him in there. They've had faith in him, which is huge too, but he's not shying away from the big opportunities, and he's playing third base for a first place team in the AL East and fighting for a playoff spot, fighting for the division, fighting for a chance to move deep, and he's going to be a big part of what you do come October.
All at 20 years old too. Like, that is
still
just absolutely ridiculous.
Still can't have a sip of alcohol in public.
Nope, he cannot, and that's crazy to me. Like, if they clinch that division and are even, you know, whatever they do, they'll be popping champagne. Obviously, he's going to be drinking, and I mean, Tyler Seguin was drinking when they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, drinking out of the cup on national TV. He's okay.
But he was also in Canada drinking ages 19 there, so.
That's true.
But, I mean, I love Devers. I love what he's doing, and I'll say it time and time again, he's completely proved me wrong because I didn't want him up here. I was concerned they were going to destroy his confidence and it was going to be like a Moncada kind of thing. I was terrified for it, and I'm so happy that he's just really producing at the plate. He's producing on the field. He was born to play baseball, like Andrew Benintendi. Like, these two kids were just born to play baseball, and they're kids. We have so much time left to see these guys play. It's so much fun.
Yep, and as long as his defense held up, which it has, mind you, he's made some nice plays at third base, some backhanded scoops with darts across to first. He's looked great over there at the hot corner, too. So as long as that stays consistent and the bat stays where it's been, no problem there. So I love the co-MVP there. That's just his recap. Of course, brought to you by our good friends at FanDuel. Football, of course, is back. Week one is in the books. And, of course, it's fantasy football for everybody. New contest every week. If you forgot to play Kareem Hunt like this guy, you can put him on your back in your roster. If you don't have him on your roster, you can play him in 1 week fantasy. He must have killed it for anyone who played on Thursday night, 1 week team. And now, you know, guys, I should have played him. Everyone should have played him. But the 1 week fantasy is great. You know, we're playing. We're on their plane. You guys can play against us this upcoming week in week two. We'll show you how to do that. But guys, 1 week fantasy is great because on FanDuel especially, you know, new rosters every week, you draft every week, and it's just a nice experience for everybody because yearly fantasy can get kind of frustrating.
I should have put Jacksonville defense in. I'll just leave it at that. I'm so mad about that.
I had Indianapolis' defense against the Rams that scored 46 points. I don't think so well.
Yeah. Fantasy. This is the love-hate relationship with fantasy.
The nice thing about, yeah.
I want to give FanDuel credit because I've never done FanDuel and I'm not doing fantasy football anymore because it drives me insane and I haven't done that at all. But because of this FanDuel thing we're doing in this promo, I bought in and you guys should too because I actually really enjoyed it. I had fun picking the team and I had fun following it throughout the day. I started out well, I didn't end very well, but I have confidence that I will do well in future weeks. And I hope
And it'll get you amped up to join a league, a yearly league. It just gets you more frustrated. Friendships and families have ended.
Yeah. Everything's been torn apart because of yearly leagues. But nice thing about it is there's over 2.5 million people playing on FanDuel. So you have a ton of people to play against. Join Jess. He was a newcomer to FanDuel. What he did was use our code RedSoxBeat. He got an offer. It's free with no deposit required. You can visit FanDuel.com. You hit the join now button. You can also go to FanDuel.com/RedSoxBeat and play against us in our listener league as well, and that'll be there for week two. So definitely check that out. Again, of course, you're going to do FanDuel.com, claim your free contest, and play for a share of $10,000. Just sign up using our promo code, which is RedSoxBeat. That's FanDuel.com. The promo code is RedSoxBeat, all one word. Void where prohibited. Guys, 1 week fantasy is phenomenal. Fantasy football in general is phenomenal. And it's just FanDuel's a phenomenal partner. I'm glad to have him there. So
if you join the league, if you join our listener league, my username is Jester 11, three S's, Jester 11.
Because it is for everything.
I'm sure listeners will be able to guess my name. So
yeah, seriously. And yeah, mine is simple. Mine is just Jay Scally, I believe. So
So you can find us all.
You can find us all, and we'll check us out, and we'll promote where to go during the week as well. So definitely check out the Listener League there on FanDuel.com. Promo code again, RedSoxBeat. So one thing we have to talk about, we've been kind of talking about it a little bit here and there, but month of August, guys, he's under 2 ERA. It's like a 1.5. I don't even know exactly the number. But Doug Fister has been absolutely stud-like. He's pitched like 30 innings, I think, over the course of the month, and just guy is dominating everybody. This is what he was doing, you know, in Detroit. This is why Dombrowski has some faith to bring him back. And now it's a case of, I think it's sustainable. I think this is what you're going to get. Now it's, he has another quality start. Is he going to be in the playoff rotation? Has to be. Does someone get kicked out? What does this look like for him? And can he keep this up at least through September to sustain the bandwagon that we've all clearly jumped on at this point?
There's no way you don't start him in the playoffs. And whether that's your two or three starter, he's got to be in that rotation. And if somebody's getting left out, it's, I'm sure we'll talk about it, it's David Price, just because you can't, he doesn't belong there right now. And he's, you know, coming off simulated games, which is great, but I don't trust him. I don't trust the elbow. I don't care how good he says he feels. Put him in the bullpen. That's where he belongs. And then figure out the odd man out from there. But you can't leave Fister out of this rotation when he's striking out nine guys. He's going deep into games, which we so badly need. And it's just, you can't. He's played in the playoffs before. He's won a playoff game before.
Only person in this rotation who has won a playoff game at all.
As a starter.
As a starter. Well, yeah, David Price, yeah, you have two wins in the, out of the bullpen. Good for
go
you.
Go back to the bullpen where you
go
belong.
Back to the bullpen. Then. Right. But the thing with this, though, is the problem is it's only going to be a four-man rotation. No one ever does five. So David Price is the obvious one. Now you have Sale, got to be Drew Pomeranz, our good buddy there. And now you look at Porcello, Erod, and Fister. That's five. They're not going to use five unless they really have to. So it comes down to Erod and Porcello, who's the odd man out there. And
Erod.
At that point, who knows? Porcello's got to earn my trust into September if he wants.
I still trust Porcello more than Erod just because of experience and age. Erod's a little too inconsistent for me.
Yeah, I think I got to go with that too. I mean, I know Porcello hasn't had the best year. He gives up a lot of home runs, and we saw what he did last year against Cleveland. But I know it's just, I don't trust Erod. I can't trust him. Like I said, he's young. He doesn't have the playoff experience, and I know he'll get that eventually, but especially if we're going against the Windians, I'm not even.
I don't think we're going to have to go against the Windians now because they're going to be the one seed, and we won't be. We'll be like, it's not going to happen. Probably face the Astros. But that being said, I'm leaning towards Erod, but right now my answer is Rick Porcello because he's super inconsistent, and the home run ball scares the crap out of me. Rick Porcello gave up, I wrote an article on Couch Guys Sports like a couple hours ago, and it was like 17 home runs in the month of August. Erod gave up five. And that's a big number for me because it's crunch time, and if both are inconsistent, both have about a 4 ERA in August, at that point you give me the lefty and you give me a guy who's not going to let the long ball, because like I said earlier, one swing of the bat, it turns to three runs instead of just a couple, and that's a big difference in a playoff game when you're playing a team, whether it's Houston or Cleveland. A couple ding-dongs and you're down and you're screwed.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a tough choice, but yeah, you got to throw Fister in there. He's going to be your three at this point. I mean, this guy has been, between his experience, he's had several really strong seasons in the league. He's been in the league for quite a while.
Yep.
But just his last four games, 9 innings, 7 innings, 7 innings, 7 innings, 1 run, 2 runs, 1 run, 1 run. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You've got to go with your hot hand. I mean, you got to go with who's pitching well.
Yeah, you have to.
There's no doubt he's number three right now. I mean, obviously Pomeranz has been great, so you got to put him above him. And you're never going to put Sale anywhere but one, no matter what he does.
Yep.
So there's no doubt that Fister's three. He has to be. He's totally earned it, which is hilarious because he wasn't even here to start the year. The Angels didn't even want him in their organization.
Nope.
And now he's sitting here talking about being our three star. That's insane. Yeah. Been so fun to watch.
He's been phenomenal. It shows why he was doing the good things for the Tigers when he was there a couple years ago, and it also speaks to the inconsistency of the rotation. You know, now you have a guy in Rick Porcello you thought you could bank on coming into the year. He's iffy. Same thing with Erod. Now David Price, who threw a simulated game and claimed he felt good, but now you're not going to put him in the rotation. He can't pitch in the playoffs. He's not going to get on a mound. He can't go to Pawtucket. They're done. So it's now the point where simulated games is all he can do, and I don't trust the simulated game to tell me he can go pitch in a postseason game.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I know simulated games are completely different than pitching in big league games, and I'm glad he's pitching well, and I'm glad that he seems to be rehabbing well. But I mean, did you guys ever think at the beginning of spring training that we'd ever be sitting here talking about Doug Fister being number three starter,
or if we want David Price being in our rotation?
Exactly. Like, we at the beginning of the season, we're like, this rotation is stacked. We're gonna be so good that it was like, oh no. And
never,
now it's
just, you never know what's gonna happen during the
this
season.
This is why I love baseball, because Rick Porcello could be the odd man out in a playoff rotation where Doug Fister could take the spot. And like you said, this guy wasn't even on the team to start the season.
Rick Porcello won Cy Young last year.
Yeah,
you're
going from a Cy Young winner to a guy who could potentially be left off a postseason roster, a postseason rotation.
Opening day starter, and he might not be on the rotation. That's insane.
That's crazy.
This is why I love baseball. You never know what's going to happen. It's a long season, and it's every week, I swear. It's just like, it's something different. It makes it fun. It makes it exciting. It makes it stressful for Red Sox fans, but it's just like, it's insane. I never thought we'd be here talking about who would be left off the rotation in names like David Price and Rick Porcello.
Yeah.
Well, me and Nick talked about this on our roundtable a couple hours ago, just with Price. It's like, if he continues what he's doing, you know, simulated game, 5 days later, simulated game, one more inning pitched, 5 days later, simulated inning, game, one more inning pitched, he's not gonna be starting.
He'll barely be good to go into the bullpen.
Yeah, exactly. So if anyone wants him to start at the end of the season or just start for the playoff roster, forget it. The guy's his rehab process is so slow. I mean, there's no way in hell he's coming back.
No, there's no way. I'd rather him nowhere near this team at this point. They're doing okay without him. Their bullpen's showed up. You know, Carson Smith's back. It's another arm. You saw in the 19th inning game. There's enough arms out there, especially with the call-ups, that at least now they can save some guys and not have to tax all of them through September in these longer games. They're going to use different people to battle to win the division. But going into October, you're rested. You can use everybody. You have a sure back end of your bullpen, especially if Carson Smith is actually healthy, which he looked pretty good in the highlights, and you guys claimed he looked really good. So that's another arm, 6th through 9th inning, that's shored up. If your starters can't get to the 5th inning, you're not going to win a playoff game anyway.
And we also know that Mitch Moreland can pitch if need be. So
lefty.
We do know that he is a solid backup.
really, really backup,
yeah. Lauren mentioned she loves baseball. One reason why I don't love baseball is this Apple Watch thing becoming a story. And I don't want to talk about it forever, but we haven't talked about it on this show because it was like the day after, like everything else breaks in this world, after we record the show. So quickly, guys, what are your thoughts on this? I think it's hilarious that they thought Doug Fister's mouth guard was a headpiece. Stupid Yankees. Just overall, I think this is moronic that it became a story. It's obviously not illegal to steal signs. That wasn't the problem. It was the technology. But what is your thought on all this becoming a story between the Red Sox and the Yankees, and the fact that it actually has fueled the rivalry? This has actually fueled the rivalry. CC was talking crap. Christian Vasquez hit that hit the double, or whatever it was, and he looked over and did this and like IT, what time is it type thing for the Apple Watch? Yeah, like, come on.
I mean, it's stupid that it's become such a big story. I like that it's fueled the rivalry, but it's so dumb. But everyone's focused on, like, oh, it's not illegal to steal signs. It's not. It's the Apple Watch that was illegal or whatever. I'm impressed by how quickly they got, like, the sign from person to person. If you think, like, how many people that sign had to go through to get to the batter, you just think, like, it has to go from this person, and then they're doing it on the watch. So I'm like, that's kind of impressive. So I'm going to give them props.
Possible.
Yeah, it's, right? I don't know how it's so flawless. Like, and the Red Sox were like, yeah, we did it. Whatever. Thanks, though. Appreciate it.
But then you know what? They stole the signs and they still lost the game. So screw off, Yankees. You guys are just terrible. And you will think of like any excuse to just make us, make the Red Sox look bad. And it's, like you said, the whole, they're stealing signs. Like, look at that earpiece. Like,
stupid.
Doug Fister grinds his damn teeth.
Yeah.
So many people grind their teeth. So he wears a mouth guard.
I got a mouth guard for nighttime.
Yeah, see?
I grind my teeth. Yeah, Doug.
Yeah. And it's just like, when I was a pitcher, I wore a mouth guard just for sole fact of just being terrified of getting hit in the face, because I don't want to lose my teeth. I don't think anybody wants to lose their teeth. So it's just,
Garen,
you know,
he's lost some teeth tonight.
Oh, that's terrible, but I wish her a speedy recovery. Absolutely. I never want to lose any teeth, but it's so dumb and it's so pointless. And I know they said like the punishment could come down this week, and even Manfred didn't even look fazed by this.
It's got to be a fine. Like, oh, it's got to be something stupidly little. Because Manfred, like you said, didn't even care. He was like, no, whatever.
He's like, oh, the rivalry's back. Great.
He's like, oh, Red Sox Yankees. Great, yeah, more watches. Let's buy them all
ratings,
watches.
Ratings, like, ratings, ratings.
Baseball's back. Yay.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely I encourage people to listen to our roundtable. We had a two-part roundtable, a fire fest between Nick Qualia, Alex Barth, and Adam Ballou. Alex and Adam thought that it was, like, a big deal and that, like, it was a really bad look for the Sox. Nick said that it was going to die and end real quickly, which is kind of what's happened. I don't know. I think it's obviously a bad look, you know, because doing something that's against the rules. But to see the commissioner's response to it and to see that nobody's really cared that much about it and that the Yankees, you know, the Sox played and the Yankees did the same thing and then everyone's like, oh, yeah, we still signed. Like, nobody really made it seem like a big deal. I thought it was going to turn into a big deal because of the whole thing with the Patriots and that happening with them. I thought it was going to be that all over again, but it just died quickly. And I think that Manfred not really caring about it definitely fueled the fact that nobody else cared about it because he was like, well, whatever. So, I don't know. It's a bad look, no doubt, because you got caught, I guess, and that's, you know, admitting to it. That's not good, but a week later to see that it hasn't really gone anywhere makes it not really seem like it's as bad as maybe it seemed.
No, and sorry, again.
As Pedroia came out and was like, yeah, we still signed, so what?
Everyone like, else does, yeah. Like, it's so stupid. Manfred's comments should have told everybody in the world watching and understanding baseball that it doesn't matter. Like, they're going to get with a fine because of the technology, and that's not allowed, which is why they came and fessed up. Yeah, we had Apple Watches on our wrists, but stealing signs is not a problem. So they're not going to get hit with some suspension or vacating wins, John Heyman, you idiot. They're not going to get hit with any of that. Like, it's just going to be a small fine for having technology in the clubhouse, and that is it. They can't fine them or, like, yell at them for stealing signs because it's legal in the game if you can figure out how to do it. Let's move on because Christian Vasquez, we wanted to touch on this quickly and didn't really mention it while we were doing the recap, but there's one play in particular, and Jess, you're particularly fired up about this play too because he was tagging up from third base. It was in that game. Which day was it? Remind me. Which game was it?
It was yesterday. It was Sunday.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it was yesterday. And they were winning 1-0 at the time. It was going to be 2-0. Vasquez tags up his third. I love the aggressiveness, by the way. Definitely love the fact that he went. Slid into home. They called him out. They challenge it. The replay goes in. Clearly, Christian Vasquez gets his foot underneath before the tag even comes close to tagging him in the back of the knee. The throw pulled him up off the first baseline, so he had to come back. Couldn't get the tag in time. A million times over, Jerry Remy, Dennis Eckersley in the booth said that he's definitely safe. Look at it. We watched it a million times. The Tampa Bay Rays, they all were on the field. They all went back on the field. They all knew he was safe. Everyone went back to their positions. Cobb was back on the mound throwing warm-up pitches. And then the stupid idiots in New York screwed up and come back and say he's out. And everyone comes off the field like, oh, what just happened?
I hate this because, one, like you said, it would have been 2-0. And as you listen to my recap, the Sox never scored a run after that. They had one run for the whole game. Yep. So it totally blew that, totally changed the momentum of the game. I think the Sox could have won that game if they had that run. It totally changed everything. And, God, it was the worst call. What are they looking at? The thing was, the glove wasn't even close to down. It was like this far, for people watching on video, it was like this far before his glove even, and then he hit it as his foot was already way on the base. It wasn't even close. Eck and Remy and O'Brien are all like, oh, yeah, that's totally safe, no question about it. Like you said, the players are on the field, and then they still call him out. I love the reaction. They're like, what?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you serious? How is he safe? How is he out? That was so safe. I couldn't believe it. I'm just sitting there like,
and the only even like justifiable thing the league can say was, well, there's no conclusive evidence, but there is because there was one angle in particular that the camera was behind them. And watching Vasquez slide in almost from like right behind where like the batter's circle is. And it was a situation where you could clearly tell his slide was under and then the glove was still in the air, and then it made contact and changed directions with the leg. Like, there was such concrete evidence that they could reverse that call. I don't understand. This is replay. Why replay needed to be added to the game for situations like this. And it took so long. And I was like,
the umpire had the greatest view of it. He was like on the play. He was, his eyes were like on his leg. Like, he could not have been closer if he tried to be closer. It was so dumb.
It was so stupid. And I read an article from Rob Bradford from EEI, and Farrell said the explanation was they can't definitively say if the foot made contact with the plate. Now I'm gonna show a picture for you guys on video. Can you guys tell that that's definitively
on the plate? Yes, that foot is on the plate.
Yep. So that was the explanation the Red Sox were given, was that they couldn't tell that the foot was definitively on the plate. And I'm staring at it. I'm like, I don't know how much more definitive it could get than that. I don't. And this is exactly why we have replay. And it changed the course of the game. And this is why I don't understand what anyone in New York was looking at, because Red Sox fan or not, I don't care what fan of the team you are, he was safe. He was painfully horrendous. Like, it was
the Rays were
like
back to the field. The Rays were on the field. Cobb was throwing warm-up pitches to stay loose because he knew he had to throw more pitches that inning.
Because they saw the replay on the Jumbotron, and they have eyes.
It's absolutely moronic what happened.
That's when you know the Yumps got it wrong, when the away team is going back in the field. Like, whoops, okay.
Unbelievable.
Drove me nuts. Absolutely not. They must have watched it off 16 times.
And that changed the tides of that game, right? Just like you said, they didn't score another run that entire game. So if you go up 2-0, stay alive in that inning, keep going, that changes momentum. You might even win that game. So
you might score more runs in that inning than you already did.
Exactly. So look, that was stupid.
Could have been a sweep.
I don't know what New York was thinking. One thing I definitely want to talk about, and I'm glad that we just got put in front of me on the show prep sheet, was Jerry Remy back in the booth this week, and that conversation sparked it, because him and Dennis Eckersley together is something that Nesson should invest in. Keep it going. Remy supposedly is going to be back every home game this year, rest of the way, because
minus
next week.
This week.
Yeah, because he's going to be in treatment. But
treatment. Yeah.
Supposedly it's going really well, which is awesome to hear. It's going better than they thought, so he's going to be back sooner, which is why he was in the booth. But can I tell you guys, this series is a prime example. And that whole collaboration of what happened in that call showed me why Dennis Eckersley and Jerry Remy together with Dave O'Brien should be the long-term plan for Nesson.
Oh, it absolutely should. They're so much fun together. And it's just like, I mean, it'll never be Remy and Don, but it was just, it was captivating and it was funny. I laughed, and just them reminiscing was just absolutely everything. And it's just something that Nesson's been missing since Orsillo's been gone.
Yep.
And now that they finally figured this out, where it's like, okay, you've been giving OB these people, like person after person, and just fill-ins, and some of them have been painful to listen to, and then you get these three and they just click, and it's just like a natural click. There's just so much chemistry between these guys where this needs to happen next season. They need to figure it out, that people are going to watch the games, people are going to be listening to these clips on Twitter and on Nesson, and it works, and they cannot screw this up, because it works. Leave it alone. Keep this like dynamic going for the rest of forever. It works. It works, Nesson.
Yeah, you just gotta hope that Remy gets healthy so he can continue to do it. Yeah, they were great. I mean, they're a good combination of a lot of things. They're completely real. Like, that reaction to the call was so funny, because they're just so real. They're not like scripted. Like, oh, we have to say this. Like,
well,
oh, that's
Remy's always been real, because Remy can get away with a lot
because
he's Remy.
Right. Exactly. So they're both real in that sense. They're both obviously really good at analyzing, because they're both players, but they both play different positions, which is why they work even better together, because they have different perspectives on the game. So that part's great. O'Brien works great with them because he's kind of a good buffer between the two of them, and he works well with everybody because he's been thrown with like 400 different people this year, like you guys
O'Brien's
said.
A constant pro. He's just got a steadiness to him.
Yeah, he is. He's not the most exciting guy in the world, but he gets the job done. He knows what he's talking about, and he can work with anybody, which makes him really good. But yeah, I mean, Chad Finn wrote an article about it for the Globe about how, you know, so many of the announcers they brought in have been complete flops, and he was like, Eck and OB are the best combination, and then you throw Remy in there, and that just worked fantastically. So yeah, great combination. They better keep Eck around, and Jerry better get healthy so he can continue, because, I mean, if they can get away with a three-man booth for good, they should, because it's great, and they don't step on each other's toes. Like, nobody talked more than the others. It was such a great great chemistry. So they got something there.
Yeah,
keep
no,
it, please it don't screw it up like Don.
Yeah, seriously, it definitely seems like it works because you know, it's like you said, it's different positions. So when something happens, one knows it's their turn to talk because they're the expert in that situation, and it just works because there's just so much. It seems like this chemistry that they've ever worked together. They even said it on there. They both said it's great to work with you guys. Like they never worked together until this, and it seems like they've been working together for a while. So when that's the case, you know you have something on your hands. So Nesson, two things. Do me a favor. One, get rid of all the crap on the screen during the game. All those ads, all the numbers, all the random facts. I don't care what the road player's favorite movie is. Don't care. Get rid of all that crap. And get rid of all. Else part of the thing is too is get rid of the stupid. We're staying at the ballpark thing. You're still playing the commercials.
So useless.
And then watch the little players run around in small boxes that I can't even tell where they are at Fenway Park. It looks like they could be outside on Causeway Street for all I know. So let's stop that, and then let's leave these two alone with Dave O'Brien next year as long as Remy's 100% ready to go, which he sounds like he should be, which is good. So before
if he's not, just keep Eck, please.
And just still keep Eck. Yeah, Eck's
yeah,
not going.
Keep
Eck. Eck's a constant there. Before we get out of here, do our predictions. One thing around the league I really wanted to talk about was the Indians, because I don't think they're going to lose again. Like, these guys have been playing phenomenal. They were behind the Red Sox, and you can't even blame them for playing better than the Red Sox, because they're just, they haven't lost. They figured it out. They hit their stride, and the guys, they're going to be the one seed. They're going to take over the Astros.
It's insane. They haven't lost since August. Against the Red Sox.
August 23rd was their last loss.
It's crazy because, you know, you think like, you know, 6-7 games, like, oh, that's cool. Like 10 games, oh, that's cool. Now it's like, make it stop.
Yeah.
They won't stop winning. And I have a good friend who I've worked on many sets with, who is just diehard Indians fans. And he texts me Sunday night right after the Indians won. And he's like, do I need to keep saying it? And I was like, no. And then he texts me tonight right before we started recording. And he's like, never losing again. And then in parentheses, it says, this was a pre-scheduled text. And I was like, shut up. Like, I'm over this. Like, we have a little bet going. If the Red Sox have a better end of the season record, I have to do a show in all Indians gear. And I'm kind of like really scared about that right now. But that, because that's looking really bad. You know, beginning of the year, I was like, yeah, this is great. And we had a bet earlier in the year, if the Red Sox had a better record at the All-Star break, he'd have to wear Red Sox gear. And he did. He owned up to his bet. So now I'm a little scared that come the end of the season, I'm going to be rocking some
Indians gear.
Some old Chief gear.
Do you own Chief gear? Like, do you own the Indians gear?
I don't. I have no reason to. I'm a Red Sox fan.
So if the Indians are first, you have to wear it?
If they have a better record than the Red Sox at the end of the regular season, I have to wear
Indians, you have to wear Indians
gear. Yeah, you might want to go buy some Indians gear, because that's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little nervous now, because I don't want people... Yeah, I know. It's a little scary. I'm going to be wearing something that's not Red Sox or Celtics or Leicester. It's going to be a little weird.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with them.
This isn't baseball, period. There's a lot of crazy things going on. The Indians have won 19 games in a row. The Diamondbacks won 13 games in a row until that got snapped, you know, like 5 or 6 days ago. And the Los Angeles Dodgers, who were 90-32, have lost 15 of the last 16 games. They've lost 10 games in a row. What happened there? So you have a 19-game winning streak, you have a 13-game winning streak, and you have the best team in the league losing 10 in their own 15 out of 16, and they're still the best
team in the
league.
They're still the best record in the league. That's how far away they were ahead of everybody
else. What is wrong with this picture? I can't believe
this. I love baseball.
There's so many insane things happening. I was looking at it last night, and I was like, what is going on? I was like, this is insane, these streaks that are happening. It's wild. You don't see that every day.
No.
We're living in some wild times right now in baseball.
It's really disgusting to see the fact that the Dodgers have lost so much, and they're still the best record in baseball.
Why have they lost so much, though? Why are they so terrible?
I feel like they just stopped trying. I really do. I really just don't think they're trying.
They could have been the best team in the league ever in history. They could have gotten 117 wins. If they kept winning 70% of their games like they had the whole rest of the year, I calculated it myself like 3 weeks ago. They would have been the best team in history in the regular season. And now they're lucky. They're going to be lucky to even get 100 wins. They can't win anymore.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Why are they so bad?
No idea, but they got 3 weeks to make it up, though. They got 3 weeks to figure it out.
Yeah.
No, they're gonna make, they're going to make the playoffs.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt they're going to make the playoffs, but
they're probably still going to be the best team if they if they win ever again.
But 2017's been a really weird year, and there's been a lot of weird happenings around sports and especially baseball. And now, like you said, they lose all those games, 13 out of 14, whatever it was, and they're still the best in the league. And everyone's I'm sure you guys have seen all over Twitter the Sports Illustrated cover where it's like best team ever. And but somebody, I forget, they retweeted today and they're like, at least they put a question mark. And I was like,
that's phenomenal.
They're still the best team right now. Best team ever? Probably not now, but they're still the best team in the league. And I want the Red Sox to be that good where if they lose 13 out of 14, lose 10 in a row, and they're still like, eh, we still have a big old lead for first place, so we're not even worried. It's just, it's crazy what can happen in the span of a month. It's absolutely insane.
But you never know even what could happen. Like, the Indians could go lose 15 in a row now, you know? Like, that could happen.
Yeah, they're peaking at the wrong time. They might peak and now lose in the playoffs. And I don't think it'll happen, but the Dodgers very well could easily turn this thing around very quickly because they are a good team. I think they'll be fine. I think it's literally just they're not trying or something's going on.
But that's really hard to lose 15 out of 16 games. That's really difficult to do.
Yeah.
Like, you got to try real hard.
19 in a row.
Yeah, that's also true.
But it's, like, equally as hard to lose 15 out of 16, especially when you're the best team. Like, that's a lot of losses. You can't even get lucky one game and, like, win once?
Nope. Not apparently. Nope. I guess not.
Did it start with that Rich Hill game when he had the no-hitter? Is that when it started? When he had the no-hitter, but he still lost in the 10th inning?
Probably, yeah.
It was right around there.
Yeah, it was. And they lost 10 in a row, so... Man.
Sorry, Rich Hill. You're the curse still. Okay, so before we get out of here, show's coming to an end. I don't know what's going on in Cleveland. I don't know what's going on in LA, but God bless both of them.
A lot.
A lot is happening. And a lot's happening around here. We have big week coming up. A very easy week if the Red Sox do what they're supposed to do. 3 against Toronto. 3 against Tampa Bay. All at home.
You mean Oakland?
Oh, my bad. I meant Oakland. Well, that's last week. Even easier week. They're playing Oakland. So...
Tampa Bay's on the road, by the way.
Let's skip over Oakland because they're sweeping Oakland, right? That's the consensus here, right?
That is what we said.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're just going to... They're bad. They're going to sweep Oakland.
They'll probably lose 2 out of 3.
Probably, but that's what we went with. So let's move to the Tampa Bay series. That game is in Tampa at Tropicana Field.
Maybe.
We'll see.
They announced today that they have full plans to play there.
It should be fine. Honestly, the hurricane didn't do as much as they thought. The hurricane didn't do as much as they thought it was going to. So it seems like
it got like downgraded.
Yes, right. Very quickly. So, I have them sweeping Tampa Bay, guys. I have them going 6-0 this week. I look at the schedule. I hate to do it because it's not me, but Oakland's garbage. Tampa Bay's even more garbage. And if it wasn't for a crappy call, you probably sweep them this past weekend. So they're going 6-0.
You're very brave. I mean, I think they're going to take 2 out of 3 from Oakland, and I think 2 out of 3 from Tampa Bay as well. And I hate using, you know, the hurricane down there as an excuse, but we've seen firsthand here, like, a tragic event can really spark a team to win a couple games or to really just, like, get going. And I think that the Rays are going to rally around it, and I don't think they're a good team by any means, but I still think they're going to take at least one from the Red Sox, and I think they're going to use that, like, being home, and they're going to win for their fans kind of thing. But it's still gonna be an easy week for Boston.
Yeah, I've got a sweep of the Rays too. In addition to the A's, you got to take advantage of these games. You're not playing good teams. The A's are awful. You got a terrible record. And I think the Sox are seeing teams like the Indians winning all these games, and the Astros are still like 5-6 games ahead. So I think they're probably thinking right now, like, all right, some urgency. Let's catch up to these teams in the stretch run here. You got to take advantage against these bad teams. 3 games against Oakland at home. And 3 on the road against Tampa Bay. I think you got to take advantage. I think they'll come ready to play. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if it was a 5-1 week, but if they can get 2 sweeps in a row, that'd be great. That then, you know, after winning 4 in a row before, that would be 10 out of 11 games won. Now we're talking some Indian stuff again. So
yeah, that
would be helpful.
This is a week to keep up with them. Maybe put the Yankees in your rearview mirror as well. Finally, would be a big week to be able to do that. So that's what you're looking at. Jess and I both predicting the big 6-0 week. Lauren going 5-1. Either way, 5-1 still something to be happy about. And, Red Sox fan for sure.
Quick side note: Hanley Ramirez just changed his Instagram picture, so everyone should go take a look at that because it's a doozy. It's hilarious, and I just tweeted it out, so I think it'll give the Red Sox fans a little laugh and something to love Hanley for a little bit more.
Oh, I love it.
People love Hanley?
People do love Hanley.
I think they're going to love him a little more.
All right.
It's me. I'm looking. I can't stop.
Go check out Lauren's Twitter. Go check out Hanley's Instagram. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Red Sox underscore beat. Facebook, Red Sox Beat Podcast. CLNS Media is at CLNS Media. Facebook, same thing. Don't forget to check out FanDuel.com/Red Sox Beat. Week 2 Listener League will promote it. You can join us. You can play against us. And don't forget to use the code Red Sox Beat as Lauren is cracking up over the Hanley Ramirez Instagram picture. So go check it out. Don't forget to use the promo code Red Sox Beat for the two of those nut jobs over there, Jess Thomas and Lauren Campbell. I am Jared Scali. We'll be back next week. This has been Red Sox Beat here on CLNS Media.